Hey everyone, this is James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and BikeJames.com, and welcome to another Bike James podcast. In this podcast, I'm actually just going to be going over my notes from the BioForce Coaches Weekend. I guess Joel Jamison, the guy who is behind the BioForce coaching certification that I did a few years ago, every year he puts on a free event for coaches who have done it, which is really great. It's not a recertification or any sort of money grab to try to get more money out of you. It literally is just a free event where he has some really great speakers come in and present, and you get to hang out with some really smart coaches from around the world. We had it was a guy that came in from Australia, another guy that came in from Denmark, a guy from the UK, a guy from Costa Rica. So really drew an international audience, as well as some really high level strength coaches from around the country. I mean, there were several D1 strength coaches for teams that you would recognize. The Seattle Mariners head strength and conditioning coach was there, so it really was a great event, a great place to share some ideas and learn from people. And so Joel had several speakers presenting on subjects like sleep coaching, and had a girl present on what it takes to be an ultra marathon runner. Basically, she runs 100, 200 mile races, and so really varied topics and things that I hadn't necessarily heard and been exposed to at a lot of other seminars and workshops. And so it was really interesting. I wasn't quite sure how some of the presentations were going to go, but all of them I took a lot away from. So I wanted to just share some of my insights and notes while it was still fresh in my head. And so, so getting started, Joel kicked off the weekend. And Joel, if you guys don't know, he is one of the best conditioning coaches in the world, if not the best. He literally wrote the book on, conditioning, his book, Ultimate MMA Conditioning. Yes, it's geared towards an MMA audience, but it's still one of the best cardio training books that I've ever read from just a practicality standpoint of coming away from it going like, oh, okay, I have a much clearer idea of how different types of cardio training and intervals and things like that, what they actually do, and then how you can use them to create different results rather than, just randomly using different intervals and different cardio workouts based on what, kind of you think will work best. And so his book definitely had a big influence on the cardio training programs that I write for my programs. He's also the guy behind, originally it was BioForce HRV, but now it's the Morpheus recovery tool or recovery app. Is the name of the system. But HRV, which is your heart rate variability, again, this is something that is starting to get much more popular. There's a lot of tools out there that measure HRV, but Joel was the first, he was the first to bring a high level HRV tool to the masses. And that before that, originally you had the Omega Wave, which was a $10,000 machine, which I guess he actually invested in. So he's got more experience with HRV and athletes than pretty much anyone else that I know. And then he worked really hard to bring the BioForce HRV tool to the market. And again, like I said, that was there, there were other HRV tools out there, but Joel's knowledge of HRV and the formulas and what they meant based on his experience, like I said, I would argue that his was the first really usable, tool that you, from that higher level perspective, not just kind of, oh, here's your HRV, but really giving you an understanding of like, all right, what does this mean? And how does this impact your recovery? And then what do you do with that? And so, now I use the Morpheus recovery app, take my HRV reading every day. And it's been super valuable for me, especially as I get older, just knowing when it's okay to back off of training a little bit, when you can push ahead, when you need to take a day off, instead of just guessing on those things, having something that lets you know that for sure, is super valuable. So, you know, Joel has been a huge influence on me and the stuff that I've done with the programs I've written. And so I just kind of wanted to, a little background on him. If you don't know who he is, then you should, because he's definitely had a big influence on the strength and conditioning industry, whether you know it or not. But he was presenting on, surprise, surprise, recovery and how to optimize it. And the reason he feels strongly that recovery is the best way to optimize or individualize, which is optimizing a program. And so, you know, again, instead of just giving everyone the same workout, understanding how to use your recovery and you know how to measure your recovery and then use that information to drive your training decisions, that's how you individualize a program, because some people are going to recover from stress differently than others. So you can give two people the exact same program and their body is going to respond to it differently. You've got genetic factors. You've got all sorts of other things that affect it. You know, lifestyle affects your recovery, sleep or lack of it, your stress, all of these things will affect your results from your training. And so using recovery to individualize your program is really the best way to go about doing that. And individualizing a program is the best way to optimize it for you. And so within the big picture of recovery, he touched on five things. He said, movement, you know, how much you're moving. And this is both just daily activity and also your exercise. Move is just your daily movement. Training is your actual training that you're doing for your sport. Eating, sleeping, and then regeneration techniques. And so this would include things like, cryotherapy or massage, things that help your body regenerate from the stress of training and daily life. And so all five of those things are going to impact your results from training, basically how well you're recovering. And if you're trying to improve your performance at a sport, like for us as mountain bikers, we're trying to, you know, ride with more power, endurance, and you know, flow and confidence on the trail, then all of these things impact that. And so, you know, I talk about this a lot, but it bears repeating that people forget that it is this big picture that you have to take into mind or take into consideration, that it's not just your training, it's not just your riding, that all of these things impact your results and how your body is dealing with the stress. And so one of the things that was really interesting, sorry, I was just trying to check my notes here and get my bearing again here. He touched on calories. And the reason that this was interesting is, again, it was something that I hadn't ever really considered before, but when he talked about it, it made a lot of sense. And that is that your body can only turn over so many calories a day. And so there's a way to check, you know, figure out what your basal metabolic rate, was it the Mifflin St. Jor calculator, was one that he mentioned. You know, there are, lab tools or whatever that you can use to figure out what your basal metabolic rate is. But basically whatever your BMR, your basal metabolic rate is, you can only recover from 2 to 2.5 times that number. So just to keep the number simple, right? Let's say that your basal metabolic rate was 1,000 calories, right? You're just 1,000 calories is what it takes to keep your body just functioning. So 2 to 2.5 times that would be 2,000 to 2,500 calories. And again, these numbers are really low. I'm just doing like simple math here. And so that's what that means. So for every 1,000 calories within your basal metabolic rate, that you can only turn over 2,500 calories a day. And so what that means is that there is a ceiling to how many calories you can burn and recover from. And so the idea that burning maximum calories is a good idea is not necessarily a good idea. And that you need to keep an eye on how many calories are you burning. And then if you're burning, you know, more than that 2 to 2.5 times your basal metabolic rate, you have to take into consideration that you are not able to fully replenish and refuel from by the next day. You will not, you won't have been able to recover from that, from that you can burn and recover from. And so I hadn't really thought about it, but when you do think about it, it makes sense. And there are some implications there, especially for people who are trying to lose weight. And so if you're using mountain biking as a way to try to lose fat and lose weight, and you're using that in conjunction, especially if you're doing that in conjunction with other activities, that there is a point of diminishing returns, that you can burn too many calories in a day, and it will start to affect your recovery, and that will start to affect your results. And so if you want to not only lose weight, but also make sure that you are continuing to progress in a sustainable way, like that's the other thing, is that's not sustainable. Your body will eventually burn out. It will force you to take time off so that you can start to recover that calorie deficit. And so again, you can do it for a short time. Like if you're doing a multi-day stage race, I'll guarantee you that you're probably going to be burning more calories than you're recovering from each day. But you also know that you need to take a week or two after that and have lower activity levels and let your body recover from that and refuel and replenish itself. And so just keep that in mind while you're, planning out your strategies, either for weight loss or just kind of riding. And if you're just always just maxing out, riding as hard as you can and maximizing how many calories you're trying to burn every day, that you may be actually hurting yourself and holding your results back in the long run. So, based on that, you can use, set calorie goals. So, if you know where that ceiling is, and then you can look at trying to burn a certain number of calories within a workout in order to try and, get to the top of that ceiling, but not go over it. And so, yeah, especially if you're looking to try to lose fat and lose weight, that's a good strategy for you to look at calculating. And then he ended by talking about using tiered programming, like having hard, moderate, and light workouts. And, I talk about this with the rides as well. If you've seen any of my training programs where I talk about how to incorporate your riding into your training, I talk about hard, moderate, and light rides and how you need to, look at it. Every ride can't be hard, right? Every workout can't be hard. And so you have to have hard, moderate, and light days, and you need to have a plan for how you're using those days. And then having a tool like HRV and your recovery score from the Morpheus, tool will help you choose the right workout. So if you wake up and your recovery score is red and you're not recovered very well and you had a hard workout planned that day, then you know that you probably need to back off. You need to either go to a moderate workout or maybe even just to a recovery day, versus waking up and maybe you don't feel so good, but you check your HRV and recovery score and it's fine. And so you know that I'm not feeling so good, but my body's recovered. I can handle this workout. It's kind of all in my head. And so you know that you can push through and not be, risking injury and burnout doing it that way. And then finally, just talked about implementing recovery into your programs. Things like breathing, again, this is starting to become more popular, but using your breathing to help, reset your nervous system, get it out of the fight or flight, and into kind of more of the rest and recover, and using that as an active way to help get your body set up for recovery after a workout, having a cool down, doing soft tissue work. These are all things that can you know, definitely make an impact on how well you're going to recover. And so remember, results come from training plus recovery. How well you train is great, but if you can't recover from that training, that's really the take home message. You got to, you know, if you're burning more calories than you can recover from, if you're taking on more stress, based on, you know, lack of sleep or your daily life than you can recover from, if you're just always trying to hammer yourself with hard workouts and you can't recover from that, like, none of that is optimal, because you're just focusing on training. And it's training plus recovery that's going to lead to the results that you want. So use a roadmap to help you on the road to recovery, and use tools to help you make smarter training decisions. That's really the take home message from a lot of Joel's work, and something that I try to stress as well with the clients that I work with. So one of the things that goes into recovery is sleeping. And the next guy that presented, his name was Nick Lamb, and I'm actually going to have him on my podcast soon, doing an interview with him on this subject. But he is a sleep coach. And it was one of those things that you didn't know existed, but once you heard about it, you're like, of course, I can see where the value in that would be. Because our, you know, it's cliche, but our modern world is so, you know, it is in a lot of ways complete opposite of how we were originally on this planet, right? Like, the ability to stay up all night long and have lights going and have, you know, news on the TV and music on the radio and a phone in your hand that can deliver you, you know, you can play games and check, you know, Instagram and all these things, right? Social media. Like, that's not in the span of human history, that's a very abnormal thing. Right. And so it's, like I said, it's almost becoming cliche about how our modern lives are really going against a lot of our primal instincts and the ways that we were, you know, kind of what's healthier for us. And sleep is definitely one of those things. And so we've kind of forgotten how to sleep properly. That's really kind of the take home message from this presentation, is that based on one, we also have this weird kind of, you know, we forget we've got these Christian puritanical roots that, you know, where hard work and, you know, sleep was slothful. Like, if you needed to sleep and you needed to take a nap, like, you were lazy. Like, if you were needing to sleep more than 6 hours a night, man, that was because you were lazy, right? At least that's how my dad put it to me. But anyways, you know, and then we look around and we see all these people, these high achievers, and I sleep like 4 hours a night, 5 hours a night. And we, you know, we forget that a lot of times there's, you know, drugs behind that. There are genetic outliers and get away with that. But for the most part, everybody listening to this, you need sleep. You need high quality sleep. And that means knowing what high quality sleep means. And he started off, and what it got my attention from the beginning is that sleep is the one lever that you can pull that will impact everything else. He's talking about, like, your mental health, your physical health, your, you know, just your ability to focus and concentrate, just pretty much everything across the board. It you know, better sleep decreases your risk of disease and cancer. It's really wild when you think about it, but literally almost anything that you can think of, sleep impacts it. Like, lack of sleep will make it worse, and getting better sleep will make it better. And, you know, performance, like I said, it's just anything you can imagine. Sleep is that one lever that will impact everything. And so it's a pretty important one. And so it's that proverbial low hanging fruit, that if you can get your sleep right, you're going to have a big impact on everything else that you're trying to accomplish. One of the things, I've seen this statistic before on youth athletes, it's that if less than 8 hours of sleep equals 170% increase in your injury risk. So almost double the risk of injury for a youth athlete who's getting less than 8 hours of sleep a night. Now, again, that's on youth athletes, but you know, if you think that that number is getting much better for us older athletes, I would argue that. So I would say that it's at least a similar stat, which is that lack of sleep can definitely impact your risk of injury. And there's a lot of reasons for that, right? Like it slows reaction time. You know, there are physical, you know, consequences to not sleeping well and or getting enough sleep. And so there's a lot of reasons why that can happen, but all of them are bad for you, especially if you're riding a mountain bike and have to worry about that. Another thing that he brought up that I hadn't really heard of before is finding out what your chronotype is. And chronotype is basically the buckets that you can put kind of genetic predispositions for their circadian rhythm, that we don't all have the same circadian rhythm. We don't all have the same sleep patterns, that some people really are night owls and prefer to stay up a little bit later. And some people really do well waking up super early in the morning. And then you got a bunch of people who are in the middle, and then there are some outliers in that group. And so they had it split up into, like, you know, wolf and lion and bear. And I think dolphin was the outlier one. But the basic take home message from that was two things, which is that one, there are some genetic differences. So everyone's not going to be the same. And so trying to force the same sleep habits and timing on everyone is not the idea. But the opposite of that is, it's not a huge difference. It's not like the night owls are, you know, staying up 4, 5, 6 hours later at night, you know, staying up till 2 o'clock in the morning. That's still not it. Like, we're talking about, you know, going to bed at 10 o'clock versus going to bed at 11 o'clock. Right? Like, we're talking about an hour less than, you know, or maybe a little bit more difference in these preferences. So there's still a basic rhythm that most humans can and should follow. And there's going to be a little variation within that, but you want to not take that as an excuse for, like, oh, this is why I like to stay up and play video games all night long and not go to bed till 3. See, it's my chronotype. Like, that's a different thing. So, but anyways, it was interesting, like, you know, look at that and see how it might, you know, impact you. Another thing that he pointed out was that temperature plays a big role, and the research has found that the 65 degree range is best for sleep. And so for a lot of people, that may be a lot colder than what you may think. And so if you're having trouble sleeping, maybe turning down the thermostat can definitely help. The other thing he was talking about is using your bedroom as a trigger to sleep. And so not having TVs in there, not having, you know, a bunch of electronics. You don't want to be sitting in bed watching TV or playing on your phone before going to sleep, because you want getting into bed to be a trigger for sleep. So he even discouraged, like, reading in bed, which I thought was a little extreme. I don't know that I'm quite going to that point yet, but I definitely think that there's something to having your bedroom being a bedroom, and there's really no reason to have a TV and stereo and all these things in there that aren't triggers to sleep, but actually triggers for the opposite thing. Another interesting thing that he's pointed out that I hadn't heard before was what he called it was the 30-30 rule. He kind of shortened it to the 20-20 rule, but he said that if you're laying in bed for more than 20 minutes and you're still awake, you're not able to fall asleep, get up, go into another room. You know, you don't want to do something super stimulating, like low light, like maybe low light reading, doing some meditation and breathing, some stretching. But you spend 20 minutes in another environment until you start to get tired again, you start to get sleepy, and then go back to your bed. And the analogy was, like, you know, sitting at the table when you're not hungry, just waiting for yourself to get hungry. Like, that's kind of silly. Like, if you're not sleepy, if you wake up in the middle of the night and you're awake and you're not sleepy, and you lay there for 20 minutes, get up, go do something else. Like I said, it should be something that's trying to trigger sleep, that sleepiness feeling, but that will be more beneficial for you than just laying there and trying to force yourself to feel tired when you're not. So, So another good example or another thing that I have in my notes here is doing a brain dump 1 hour before bed. And so basically having a journal where you just write out all of the things that you may wake up in the middle of the night worried about, that if you just put it down on paper so that you know, I got that down, I don't have to worry about it. Or, you know, I may have to worry about it, but I don't have to worry about forgetting about it. Because that's usually a lot of times it's things that we're afraid we're going to forget about that we sit there and we think about. And so if you can just dump all that stuff out, have it out of your head, that it can help with your sleep. He did like those daylight alarms and the ones that use not like a light to get brighter and brighter to wake you up, as opposed to like the rah, 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 you know. So I'm looking at investing in one of those, see how that impacts things, because I definitely don't like being woken up to that, to the noise of an alarm. He also recommended trying to not eat or exercise 2 to 3 hours before bed. And so if you're, and he did say that if you, for whatever reason, your schedule just doesn't permit that, that like you just, you know, for me, like I do jujitsu 3 days a week, and some nights we don't get out of class until 8:30. So we're not getting home and eating dinner till 9. And, you know, I try to be in bed by 10, you know, it's just not working. So he was saying that in cases like that, it could actually help you to just stay up a little bit later. You know, doing some things to help you relax, but instead of trying to force yourself to go to bed when you're still kind of wired from just having exercise and having ate, that, you know, you'll have higher quality sleep if you stay up a little bit later and try to relax and give yourself a little bit more distance between the exercise and the sleep time. So anyways, just some tips there. Like I said, I'm going to have him on for a more in-depth interview on sleep and the importance of it and how it can impact things and some things that he does to help his clients. Because it's surprising how many people need help just figuring out, how do I get control of my sleep again? Like, I don't even know what good sleep is. They've got too many lights on in their room and they've got all of these stimulating things going around. And it, you know, it seems like common sense to some of us, but even I have some problems with my sleep from time to time. So I've got a few of the tips that I'm, definitely going to be looking to implement. But, sleep, one of those low hanging fruits that you can easily start to make some differences with and can impact other things. So the next guy who presented was actually the guy who owned the gym who we were, who was hosting the thing. And it was Vigor Ground Fitness there in Renton, right outside of Seattle. And it was a great gym. But his thing was about being a go-giver. And it was a really inspirational talk about how you can use your business to create positive change in the community. And so, for example, he has a workout every Saturday that is a fundraiser for a different charity every Saturday. And he'll have as many as 100 to 150 people show up donating $10 or more to the charity. And so, you can imagine how much money and how much good he's doing with that. And just saying that it didn't start out that way. You know, he had this idea. It started out with maybe one, maybe two people, but just the idea of feeling like, I want to use my position to try and help and create some positive change was really inspirational. He had a lot of good advice and ways to help kind of do that. But, you know, one, if you are listening to this and you, I don't know, I just want to encourage people to think about, is there a way that you can use your position, no matter what it is, to try and help create like some positive change in your community? Because if everybody did that, then the world would be a much better place. Again, I know it's kind of cliche, but it's true. Right. And so, and the other thing is, it definitely inspired me to try to do more. And so, I'm going to be looking at doing more fundraisers. I know I've done some things over in the past. You know, it's funny, every time I do them, I feel great after I do them. But it's one of those things that if you don't make a conscious effort to make a habit of, it can be easy to go quite a bit of time between doing it. And so, for example, I've got a monthly skills clinic that I do. I've been hosting here at the Catalyst Training Center. And we've been last Saturday of the month at 7:30 on Saturday. I do a free skills clinic. And the last one was a lot of fun. You know, I had 5-6 people show up. People learn how to, you know, do a front wheel lift for the first time ever. And it was awesome. And so what I want to do is start using those as a fundraiser for different charities. So I'm going to start having a suggested donation of, you know, $5 or $10 for people to attend. And then the money is going to go to, you know, local, charity. And so the first one that I'm going to be supporting is the, Partners Bike Club, which is kind of a mentorship program for, you know, kids, kind of like Big Brothers, Big Sisters type thing that, you know, and so it's a bike club that they put together, a mountain bike club. And I did some work with those kids, earlier this year. And it was really inspirational because, I mean, you talk about riding for the love of riding. You know, they're not riding for the love of equipment, right? They're out there on bikes that are, you know, getting them down the trail, but they're not, you know, $5,000-$6,000 bikes with all the bling, and they don't care, right? Like, they just want to go have fun. And so it's really inspirational to see them. And so, you know, wanting to help get more kids like that, that don't have those opportunities, to get out and, you know, try mountain biking. Cause I know it definitely made a huge impact on me. You know, I was a little older than a kid, but I had things that when I was a kid made that impact. And so, but anyways, it was a really inspirational talk, and it got my wheels turning on some ways that I can help. But anyways, hopefully, you know, maybe got some of you guys thinking as well about some ways that you can help. The next guy to present was a guy named Mike Robertson, and his presentation was all about coaching the big lifts, like your squat, bench, and deadlift, from a perspective of health instead of performance. And, you know, without, you know, he got into some details, but there were some basic takeaways that you could get into. But the main one was that, and I've talked about this with mountain biking, right, is that you looking at what the pros do in a sport and then trying to emulate what they're doing can cause problems. So, for example, if you want to squat, bench, and deadlift, it would be logical to say, like, okay, well, who's the best squatters and benchers and deadlifters in the world? Well, powerlifters are. They're the strongest guys. They've got the strongest squats, bench, and deadlifts. Okay, well, let's go learn from them. How do they squat, bench, and deadlift? And, oh, well, they use these certain techniques that, you know, if you don't know any better, they are specifically for lifting more weight. Like, for example, arching your back on the bench press decreases the distance between your chest and the bar. It's not good for your back, but it does help you lift more weight. And so you can start to apply techniques and strategies that pros do in order to try and, you know, achieve a higher level in their sport, which if you are paying your bills based on your, performance in that sport, then maybe that makes sense. But if you're just an average everyday, you know, bro, then that makes no sense. It's stupid for you to, sacrifice your future self for a small, percentage increase in performance today. And so you can have 90-95%+ of the performance without having to resort to the extreme things that pros do. And so again, you see this in, you know, riding, where we look at what are the pros doing? Let's try and emulate the, you know, what they're doing with their bike fits and their training strategies and all the things that they're doing without realizing that, man, a lot of those guys have serious back problems, serious knee problems. Like, they're going to be dealing with these issues for a long, 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 long time. Which again, they're paying their bills. Makes sense. But you see the same thing in powerlifting, where these guys, were applying techniques, you know, with our squats and our benches and our deadlifts in order to try to move more weight, when that's not actually what's healthy for us. And that lifting with the idea of being healthy, like, basically, like, I've kind of coined the term riding for a lifetime. And that's the idea. That's basically the at the heart of it, is lifting for a lifetime. You want to strength train with the idea that you're going to do this on a long-term basis, and that you want to do it for a lifetime and not have to stop lifting because you're so broken down and hurt from lifting that you have to stop lifting. And so the, you know, a lot of the things that he talked about were, things that I talk about in the technique cues for, you know, for the you know, exercises and stuff that I prescribe, you know, particularly your feet, making sure that you have to be able to press through your whole foot, which again goes back to the reason I designed the Catalyst pedal the way that I did, is because again, it just, he reinforced over and over that if you can't press through the whole foot, which means the front and the back of the arch, then you are going to run into problems. You can't engage the legs properly. You're not going to move properly. You're going to cause problems. And so, you know, for a lot of people when they're lifting, they tend to let their big toe knuckle peel up and come up off the ground. And so that was, and that's, you know, you got to keep that big toe knuckle pressure. For us as mountain bikers on the pedals, it's not having pedals long enough to get pressure on the back end of the arch. And so you can't press through the whole foot. You have to be able to press through the whole foot and able to engage the whole leg and create the maximum amount of power. And so when you're in the gym, you definitely need to be making sure that you're paying attention to that. And then again, it only makes sense that if we're practicing that in the gym, then we should be able to apply that on the bike. But, you know, Mike had, you know, people focused on foot pressure, focused on breathing, making sure that you're breathing properly, and then also just making sure that your hips and shoulders are acting properly. And so, again, that's, you know, when I'm coaching people, it's a lot of the same stuff. I'm watching their feet. I'm watching their hips. I'm watching their shoulders. You know, all the other stuff in between is really kind of subject to what's happening at those three areas. And so making sure that those three areas are doing what they need to do usually takes care of a lot of other details in the lift. And so anyways, it was a good presentation. Got some good tips from that, but just kind of reinforced a lot of the things that I've been doing already. So that was good. The other guy presented is a guy named Chris Duffin, and he's the guy behind Kabuki Strength. And Kabuki Strength is an interesting company. They've got a lot of great products. They've rethought a lot of strength training equipment. And what he was there presenting on was their method for soft tissue mobilization. And I'm going to be posting more videos on this. This is really hard to describe via the podcast. I'm not going to spend a ton of time on this, but basically he uses weighted implements. So for example, he's got a thing called the boomstick, and it is maybe about like a 1 inch in diameter metal rod, about like 2, maybe 2.5 feet long, and it weighs 20 pounds. And so you can use it to press into your muscles. Think about like a foam roller in reverse. Like a foam roller's on the ground and you're laying on top of it, but have you sitting on the ground and have something heavy on top of you. And it creates a much different effect than the foam roller, because when you're on the foam roller and you're rolling around, your nervous system is engaged and it's hard for you to really relax in that position. It's good. There's definitely benefit to it. But when you are prone, when your limb, whatever you're working on, is sitting on the ground and then gravity is pulling something down into it, it really allows you to relax on a different level. And so you're able to get in a little bit deeper with these tools. And then they're also great because you can tack down certain areas and then start moving. And then that mobilizes the tissue as well. And he talked about also doing what he calls like the vice technique. And so like using like an acumobility ball on one side of the muscle and then like the boomstick on the other. And so you're actually like kind of pinching the muscle between, getting that vice effect going. And so yeah, a lot of interesting methods and things. And so I did get one of the boomsticks and I'll be posting some videos on that. But it was very eye-opening, because I've been foam rolling and doing mobility work for quite a while, and there was definitely something to what they're doing. This weighted compression mobilization that they're doing is different. And, you know, in some ways, like I said, I'm not going to say it's better, because I think that that doing all of it, that you don't want to throw out foam rolling, but you're definitely doing something that foam rolling is not doing. And it definitely has a feeling it was kind of eye opening, especially like with my forearms. I've got some really tight forearms from some elbow injuries and things like that. So, anyways, I'll be digging into that more, and sharing some stuff with you guys. But, check those guys out at KabukiStrength.com. And then finally, was this the last one? 1, 2, 3. Yeah, I think so. So finally, we had Becky Rogers, who is the girl who runs 100, 200 meter races. And I'll be honest, the first half of her presentation, it was interesting, but I was like, man, I don't train ultra runners. You know, she's going into like some of the details about how she trains. And I was just like, this is interesting, but all I'm learning from this is that if an ultra runner comes to me and says, I want you to train me, I'm going to point them to you. Like, you really know what you're talking about. I'm not going to pretend like I know what I'm talking about with this stuff. But then she got into the last half, and it was about kind of what she calls the mental voodoo side of it. And that was actually really cool. And there was a lot of application for what she talked about there to pretty much anything, but especially like to mountain biking. And she had some of the things that she talked about was, you know, you use training, you do things in training sometimes that aren't necessarily there from a physical standpoint, but from a mental standpoint. So for example, she talks about how she has, she'll, you know, tie a tire to her waist with a rope and run up a dirt road with this tire. And, you know, yeah, there's some physical benefit to it, but what it really does is she says that, man, you know, she gets to a tough climb late in a race and she's like, oh, I don't know if I can make it up. She's able to say, well, fuck it. I don't got to worry about dragging that tire behind me. And so it kind of helps her mentally do that. Now, the thing though is that she does all of this smart. Like she monitors her recovery. She definitely is doing this in the context of a structured program, because I've heard people use that as an excuse for why they always say every workout has to be hard. Like, you've always got to be going hard because you're trying to train yourself to not be weak, not be soft. And, you know, there is a place for that, but it's just a place. It can't be your entire training program. And so the other thing she talked about was using visualization. And what she talked about, I thought was really interesting, was make sure you visualize the finish. And she said that she had a race, man. She was like 3 miles from the finish line and run 120 some odd miles. And 3 miles away from the finish line, she just hit the wall and she mentally crapped the bed and she could not get herself going. And she ended up crossing the finish line, but it took her so long to do it that she got a DNF because of the time cutoff. And she said she realized that she had visualized and she was prepared for every part of that race except for that last 3 miles. And she didn't visualize the finish. And I thought that was really profound. It's like, you know, that easy part, you think you're done. And it's like, man, no, you got to visualize all of it, you know? So if you're racing, I think visualization is a huge part of your performance. And so make sure you visualize the whole thing all the way through to the end. She also talked about how men and women tend to handle the mental stress of like endurance ultra events differently. And that men are, you know, the men that she coaches, she did a survey and found out, you know, pretty much 100% of them do math calculations. It's always like, oh, I've got this much further to go. If I got this speed, I'll have this long, and, you know, refueling calculations. So it's a lot of kind of logic based stuff. Whereas the women deal a little bit more with like the emotional side, and, you know, that was kind of more of the strategy, and it really wasn't like the logic and math based stuff. And so, but she did talk about with that emotional side, and this goes for men as well, was channeling the light versus the dark. And the dark side is, you know, the anger, the sorrow, the shame. We've all been there, right? Like you know, those negative emotions that can just, that can fuel your effort, right? Like you're in the gym and you pound out that last freaking rep that you wouldn't have gotten if you didn't think about that time that that girl, you know, stood you up in high school and made you feel like crap or whatever it was. You know what I mean? Like, you know, we all got those like self-loathing kind of dark side things that we can tap into, and those emotions can fuel you for sure. But it's a hot burning fuel. I mean, this is, she was saying this, and the whole time I'm sitting there just nodding my head like, dude, it's so true. Cause I've been there, that you can't fuel yourself that way for very long. That yes, it has a place, and yes, it can be a powerful tool. But if you're relying on that, if you're just relying on that kind of self-loathing and those negative emotions to drive you through training and drive you through competing all the time, you're going to burn yourself out, and you're going to end up with some problems, probably some mental problems. But the light side is the gratefulness, right? Being grateful that you're here, being grateful that you have this opportunity, being grateful for it. And it's like, you know, it's funny. I mean, this just happened to me what was it, yesterday, 2 days ago, I was on a ride with my buddy, Pete, and we're, you know, the timing of us taking off, we're about riding up and get caught in the rain. And, you know, it's raining on us pretty good. And we weren't really prepared for it. And it's muddy and, you know, it's fine. It's fun. And I'm keeping a smile on my face. And I was thinking, man, like I'm grateful for this opportunity. Like this isn't, you know, fun. Like I'm not going to say it was, you know, it's like, yeah, I'm getting wet. I'm getting cold. I'm like, I actually fell off a fucking ledge because I spun out on a rock, you know, I had mud on my tires and I spun out on a rock and lost my balance and had to like do a double hop off a little ledge and my bike goes crashing down. And, you know, if you're going to like, it wasn't fun, right? But man, I was grateful to be there. I was having fun. And it's like, you know, the rain felt good and just, you know, yeah, it was silly, right? Like you just had to smile and laugh like, man, all right, I'm not going to make it up these climbs that I usually make it up. And it ended up being a great ride. But, you know, the juxtaposition of that, and I say this just to kind of put everything in perspective, and this did go through my head at the moment was, you know, I've got a buddy who, I guess a little less than a year ago, or about a year ago, broke his back riding bikes. He had a, you know, hit a jump and a tree had fallen across and he hit the tree and broke his back and he's paralyzed from the waist down. And man, he's still getting out and riding. That dude's an inspiration. The Danimal, man, that guy is awesome. But you know, I was like, man, you know, you never know when something like that can happen and completely change everything. And so it's like, no matter how crappy your ride is, no matter how crappy your training session is, man, you should be grateful to be there. Like you wanted to be there. You chose to be there. And so, you know, having that gratefulness, fuel you rather than the anger is really like that better long-term strategy. And I think, you know, something that you have to figure out as you grow up or else you just end up like a bitter old man with no friends, kind of thing. So, but anyways, so that was really, I guess, like, you know, it was a powerful, profound thing. Cause like I said, it was definitely something I thought about on my ride yesterday. And I think that it's something that we can all do to think more of. So anyway, so that's it for my notes. I'll be honest with you, this ended up taking a lot longer than I thought it would. I guess I should know myself better. I tend to talk a lot when I get wound up on things. But so that was my recap. It was a great weekend. Like I said, I've got Nick Lamb, the sleep guy, and I'm talking with Chris Duffin, also from Kabuki Strength, about coming on the podcast and sharing some more stuff with us. So be looking forward to bringing you more stuff from that weekend as well. So anyways, going to wrap it up now. Remember, you can check me out at bikejames.com. That is the home for MTB Strength Training Systems. Been, you know, since 2005, I've been helping mountain bikers around the world have more fun on their bikes through, you know, innovative programs that employ the best training, recovery, riding, cardio training. Like I dig, you know, I don't want to leave any stone unturned when it comes to trying to help you have more fun and improve your riding on the bike. And also helping you understand how moving better off your bike is going to help you move better on your bike. So if you are struggling with a skill on your bike, a lot of times it's a movement issue, right? Like if you have trouble getting in a good balanced body position on your bike and you can't touch your toes, man, your hips aren't doing what they need to do to be able to do the skill properly in the first place. So fix your hips and the skill will come easier. And so, you know, really making sure that my programs are helping you fix the movements behind the skills on your bike, and that helps the skills on your bike come easier and more naturally to you. And also remember to check out the Catalyst pedal at pedalinginnovations.com. That is my pedal that I invented, and it is based on, like I was talking about earlier, the insight that without being able to press through the whole foot, be able to have pressure at both ends of your arch, you have a destabilized arch, right? It seems obvious, but if you're only supporting one end of your arch, right, you only have enough of a pedal to get under the ball of the foot, and it does not support the back end of your arch as well, you have a destabilized arch. And no, a stiff-soled shoe does not stabilize the arch. It just stiffens the foot. It's different, right? Stiffness is not the same thing as stability. Stiffness is cheap stability. But anyways, by having a platform that attaches both ends of your arch, you're able to have a stable arch. You get better hip recruitment. You take stress off of the knees and the calf and the lower back. You get rid of that, the forward foot rolling thing. Like basically we figured out that, clipless pedals were never better. We just had shitty flat pedal designs and the Catalyst pedal fixes that. So anyways, check us out at pedalinginnovations.com. But, anyway, so that's going to do it for this podcast. Hope you guys enjoyed it. I'll talk to everybody next time.